Sister Simone Campbell served as the executive director of Network Catholic Social Justice Lobby, when she gave this keynote address at the Ignatian Family Teach-In for Justice in 2012, which had the theme Imagination Reform, Moving Beyond the Margins.
Please come together and welcome Sister Simone Campbell to the stage.
Well, today has been an amazing day, and I am so glad to be with you all to explore imagination and the challenges that we face as a nation. And I have to ask you to ignore the paparazzi, okay? Because what I've discovered is part of my life gets taken up with a whole bunch of press cameras, and it's a bit surprising, but here we are. Speaking of imagination, there's a scripture scholar, Walter Brueggemann, some of you may know him, and he says that out of scripture, if you want to have a prophetic imagination, if you want to have an imagination as rich as the Salvadoran martyrs, you have to do two things. You have to touch the pain of the world as real. Not fix it, touch it, and let your heart be broken. And then have an active experience of hope. Now, I must say, with the energy in this room, is certainly an active experience of hope, right? So far, the energy that you all bring to DC is essential for our nation and for our future. And I want to spend some time talking with you about this magical challenge that we're facing about immigration, because you all are here at a key moment in our time. You all have already helped make a difference, because I know that many of you have worked on things like the DREAM Act, right? A lot of you know dreamers and know what the worries are, and you have already made progress. The president, earlier this year, when President Obama gave the status of deferral of deportation to some dreamers, not everybody, but some, that was historic. And it was historic because many folks like you around the country lobbied, worked, spoke up, were engaged, cried with dreamers who were stuck in a system that was not recognizing them. And because you had the willingness to touch that pain, hope was released into the darkness. And eventually we got the lawyers to agree that the president could issue a deferral of deportation order. It was the first time ever that such an order was used for a class of people, not a geographical region. It was historic, and you helped make it happen. But, my friends, we have a lot more work to do. We have a long way to go. And I want to share with you a few of my concerns, a few of my experiences, because I think we have to be really clear that this issue that you're picking up of immigration, you might want to think, oh, just without borders, without, how's it going, you know, without margins, not having any margin out there, we're all one, this is fabulous. Well, it's we're all one until we start having exceptions. Well, not you, Mildred. Or if I say, oh, I don't really like their politics. Or I say, ooh, you know, they're such and so. Anytime we create those divisions, then we're setting up margins, right? So how do you come together and create this world that we hunger for? It's a real challenge, and it's a global challenge. I want to tell you the story about when I was in Lebanon in 2008. I went to Syria and Lebanon on a small delegation to see the impact of life on the Iraqi refugees, the refugees that had fled Iraq because of the war. And I had lobbied against the war. I had been in Iraq in 2002 before we invaded, and I cared deeply about the Iraqi people. But what happened to me in Lebanon was that surprising moment. You know those things you get surprised by? Because we went to the detention facility in downtown Beirut to see how the Iraqi refugees were being held in detention because they were refusing deportation back to Iraq. And here's what we saw. The detention facility was dug in under the freeway in downtown Beirut, and the fresh air intake valves came up in the median strip of the lanes that went both directions, in the middle. And the only fresh air that got into the detention facility were through those fresh air intake valves, because the entire detention facility was built underground. And General Hariki, who stands about this tall, made me promise that if I told this story, I would tell you the Lebanese government doesn't like it, but they don't have money to make a better one. So I've told you. But under the ground, there were no windows. None. There was no fresh air. There was no yard to go out into. And what we saw there were 12 cages. Okay, so I know there's a bunch of Californians, right? Where are my Californians? Yee-hoo! All right. Well, I'm a Californian, and we know our freeways, and they're long and skinny. So this detention facility was long and skinny. And they had 12 cages with bars going up and down. And those bars going up and down, they just were like old-time zoos. And they each cage shared a set of bars with the ones next. And it was about, we'd figured, 20 feet by 20 feet. And we were told they were there to house between 30 to 40 people each. They currently held between 50 and 60, because Lebanon, who's on the edge of war all the time, had an undocumented person problem. Who knew? And so we were told that these undocumented, they held the women by nationality and the men alphabetically. And I don't know why they made that decision, but the big guard, this really big guard, told us it was because if you held the men by nationality, you had trouble. Well, he was so intimidating, I didn't ask what kind of trouble. But here, the women, we found women there from the Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, India, Tibet, let me think, where else? Then you get down into Africa, you get Sudan. I forgot all the stands up by Afghanistan. And then you get down into Sudan, Eritrea, Ethiopia. I mean, it just went on and on. There were 26 different countries represented. And right before us was the face of globalization. That in our globalized world, We have treaties for the free movement of capital. You all know those, you've experienced those treaties if you travel internationally. You can be just about any place. I was in Damascus, Syria, and our government didn't even talk to Damascus at that time, and I could draw out Syrian dinars out of the ATM, and somehow magically it would come out of my bank account. Those are all the treaties for international movement of capital. But do you know, the only treaty for the international movement of people is for the UN High Commissioner on Refugees. It's the Refugee Agreement. There is no other international agreement for the movement of people. And we know, because we're all from a first world nation, that free markets require the free movement of capital and the free movement of people. We have the free movement of capital, but we don't have the free movement of people. And so we have the struggle, the horrible struggle, the pain of the world. When you get people who have access to international television now, who can see that there is a better life someplace else, and then when you look at your family and you see hunger, well, if you put hunger and hope for something better together, you're going to move, aren't you? If you all were hungry and you thought, ooh, I could go to the United States. Unfortunately, they see only the TV version of the United States, but they come with hope. And the hunger drives people. So I wanted to share with you the poem I wrote as a result of seeing this I have to say one more thing about this underground detention facility. Most people just stayed there 2 or 3 months without ever seeing sunlight or having fresh air. The Iraqis had chosen to be there over a year rather than be deported. It had been a year since they had seen the sunlight. Can you imagine? But anyway, this is the poem that was given, and it's called Small Change. Dropped from the counter of globalization, in the midst of economic transactions, these human coins, illegal tender, get swept up into the dustpan of national identity and border security. These small coins of labor fall through the cracks of caring, ending up in dank, dark pens, smaller than pennies in the global wealth, taken as too small to matter. Mere annoyances or possible threats to a sovereign nation. These small coins are tossed into cages of 50, 60, jumbled together on the floor, in corners, along barred walls. They do not fit into ATMs. They will not be received or deposited in the world economy. They are spare change, dropped, tossed on the counter of globalization. And forgotten. When we come to deal with immigration, I am so grateful that you are picking this up because it is the forgotten who so often suffer. And tonight, I just want to quickly give you a little bit. You're in Washington, D.C., so I thought you might expect a little serious wonkish. You know wonkish? Everybody know wonk? What a wonk is? That's no spelled backward. K-N-O-W. So you're W-O-N-K if you talk like I do about all the details of legislation. It's so interesting for some people. But the important thing that you have to know is that in our nation, just as in Lebanon, we have trouble. And we've got to make sure that we take care of the problems. Now the problem is, we've had these problems for a very long time. And what we need is some new imagination. We need to imagine another way forward. Because politicians, oh, they love being stuck in this knot of stalemate. Because then they can say, oh, we can't do it. We can't do anything. It's not moving. But it's you people, it's we the people that can make the difference. So let me just give you four brief points about what's wrong with our immigration system in the United States. Just four simple things. Not much. First of all, the folks that get visas now, if you get approved for a visa to come to the United States as a relative of a U.S. citizen, you have to have a relative or you have to have a job. If you have a relative of a U.S. citizen and you're married to the citizen, that's cool. That's really fast. But if you're a brother or a sister of a U.S. citizen, for instance, the Filipinos, I'm sure we've got some Filipino folks right here. Filipino heritage? Yep. Ah, excellent. But if you're a brother or sister of a U.S. citizen, you have to wait 18 to 20 years for your number to come up. Can you imagine applying, wanting your family together, and then you have to wait 18 to 20 years? And if you, the U.S. citizen, die before that 18 to 20 years is up? So sorry. Out of luck. They're beginning to make some changes in that, but that's what it's been. So it's a huge waiting list. The second problem is this huge waiting list, but then we have this ridiculous number system that's left over from the 1950s. Actually, 1917, but we fixed it in the 50s and 60s. It doesn't work for a modern economy. And the problem that we've got is that these numbers keep people out and keep people waiting. And then we have another problem. In Congress's infinite wisdom, the last time we had a budget crisis, they decided to raise fees for coming to the U.S. That makes sense, raise fees. And the idea was that immigrants were going to pay for their own processing. That's a good goal. Okay, so if you want to come to the United States, you're going to pay for your own processing. But do you know what happened? If you've got an 18-year waiting list, right? So by the time your number comes up, the department has already spent the money that you paid. So now there's not enough money to process as the numbers come up. Does that make sense to you? Because you pay it up front. So they spent it up front. And now we need more money to process. So there's administrative waste. There's also this piece about temporary workers coming to the United States and how people can come and go, and that's a big complicated thing. But there's a fix for that. People know how to fix that. And the one that's closest to my heart are the undocumented folks that are here now. We estimate it's about 10 million. 10 million people in the United States don't have documents. Probably about 6 million had some visa of some kind, but now don't anymore because they overstayed. And these are the people that are contributing to our economy now. These are the folks, I mean, you all know them. You know some students, I'm sure. I'm sure you know some day laborers, folks who do gardening, folks who do nanny work, folks who do all kinds of work. But here's the challenge, my friends. In this election, you're here at the right time, because in this election, the Republicans are beginning to wake up to say, ooh, maybe we ought to care about immigration reform. Just saying. Yeah, maybe you ought to. About time. So imagination is beginning to shift and change. But you know what my worry is? My worry is Democrats now are going to become political, and they know that Republicans are waking up, so now we can demand a little more. And my worry is that we're going to stay caught in the struggle, because the Democratic organizing principle is to get the Hispanics, Latinos, into the Democratic Party, and the Republicans are waking up, well, maybe we ought to invite them into our party. And they're going to start fighting at parties and not solve the problem. That's where we, the people, become important, essential. We, the people, are the basis for making change, and you, I'm counting on you to touch the pain of the world that these undocumented folks have no future unless we change the law. We have got to change the law, and it's doable. But we have got to insist that it happen. If we insist that it happens, we have got to insist that there's a path to citizenship. The Republicans now want to say, oh, well, we'll give them some kind of status, but no path to citizenship. Who are we as a nation that we're going to create two classes of citizens? We're not England, where you have the nobility and the, you know, the non-nobility. I don't even know what they call the non-nobility, the ordinary folks. We're not England. We revolted against England. In our nation, everyone is equal in a democracy, and we need to find a way to make sure everybody is a piece of our country. So, you, my friends, have some serious work to do. And that's the challenge that we're facing. Because in this amazing nation of ours, many of the politicians want us to think that this is like a sporting game. Have you noticed that? That they talk about debates as who scored points, who committed a foul, who's down for the count, who's out of the game. But you know what that does to us? That makes us passive watchers of that real life politics. But democracy, the Constitution is all about the sacred art of governance and us being in this together. We cannot be couch potatoes in our democracy. To save our democracy, we need you. I need you. All of us need each other. Because if we come together and we say, govern, for heaven's sakes, solve this so that there is a humane way forward, we, the people of the United States, will form a more perfect union and establish justice. So, you got your work cut out for us. We need some new imagination about how we can do this. We need some new imagination about how we can make this happen. We need you to think in some new ways. And the only way forward is to touch the pain of the world as real and bring an active experience of hope. So that to end with, I've got a little poem to end with that's called Cultural Snag, because I think this sets up what we care about. And just imagine I had this glorious shawl. It was too cold to wear it today. I had to wear my big coat. But I have a lovely shawl from Mexico that's this lovely kind of maroon color. So just imagine it around my shoulders. And this is the poem, Cultural Snag. The Mexican claret shawl wraps in informal elegance across my Anglo shoulders. I lean into the thin warmth, sheltering from the drizzle, the breeze. The hugging textured center of this native cotton cloth solidly claims my back, arms, wraps round me. But I confess, I detest the fringe. I loathe the interfering fringe that catches on doorknobs, chair backs, rings, keys, a wide variety of protruding parts of my jagged, speeding world. The pesky fringe jolts me in mid-certain stride or dramatic gesture and snags the disquieting wonder. Should this fluid disturbance to my warm comfort be tolerated or sniffed? That is the challenge. Shall we embrace this wide diversity? Please, have a new imagination this weekend. Lift up alternatives. Be engaged because only by claiming your place in our nation, only by having a new way forward, can we, the people, form a more perfect union.